On this ESG podcast for John Lothian News, we are talking with Martina McPherson about her extensive work in the world of ESG, as we know it, environment, social, and governance. Martina is head of ESG product management at SIX, the Swiss Exchanges Group, and a board member of the Network for Sustainable Financial Markets. She is a visiting fellow at Henley Business School and a guest lecturer at University of Zurich. She has held a range of senior strategy positions at Moody's ESG Solutions, S&P Global, MSCI ESG Research, and Lloyds Banking Group, Insight Investment, among others. She's been recognized as one of the top 50 women in finance by World Finance Forum 2022 and as a strategic influencer for her ESG work. As if that weren't enough, Martina is a board member and co-chair of the Policy Regulations Working Group, the Future of Sustainable Data Alliance. This alliance is the leading industry body for the ESG data ratings and index industry. She's also a member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on ESG, Houses of Parliament UK, and there's more. But we'll end it there. Martina has done so much and is doing so much more. She's definitely a person to follow. We'll end her bio with the fact that Martina has co-edited a number of books in the ESG and related spaces. She holds an MA from the University of Frankfurt, an MBA certificate from the London School of Business and Finance, and a certificate from the Investment Association in the UK. She has a fascinating history. She got her start focusing her undergraduate studies on law and human rights, and her involvement has expanded exponentially from there. We had a fascinating and far-ranging conversation in which we touched just the tip of the ESG iceberg, discussing developments related to ESG ratings regulation in Europe and its potential impact globally, the evolving landscape of ESG, including the need for a more holistic approach, and the importance of alignment between international standards and requirements. Personally, I am excited that I have just gotten a new mic, and I look forward to better audio quality for further conversations. But most of all, above everything else, it was my pleasure to have this conversation with Martina, and I look forward to more conversations with her and her colleagues in the world of ESG and exchanges. Thanks for listening to the John Lothian News ESG podcast.
Did you just have a meeting?
Representation from everyone, Bloomberg, S&P, Moody's, LSEC, clearly SIX, Clarity AI, ESG book, CDP, really who is part of our board / of our membership organization. Exactly right. And we are coordinating and stirring, especially in times like this, when and where today the European Council and the European Parliament announced that they have a provisional agreement around the ESG ratings regulation. It's going to be an interesting time and sphere for all of us in here as data distributors, aggregators, and ultimately a marketplace for ESG information. That's more the SIX role versus, of course, predominantly also the proprietary ESG data and ratings providers that will be regulated in this sphere. And this is not just something that's relevant for Europe. You know, it's relevant in India. SEBI is coming with the same regulation. In Japan, MAS is looking at it, in Singapore. So you literally will look at a very widely regulated sphere now in the context of ESG. You started with the issuers, you continue with the investors, now it's the service providers in scope. Very interesting.
So tell us a little bit about your services.
We have four areas of activity. So we, of course, run the infrastructure at SIX for the Swiss and Spanish Exchanges Group, and our subsidiary Asia Next is part of the broader portfolio as well. Then we have security services, which is our clearinghouse, and when and where we have securities finance, where we have settlement and custody services, tax services, trade repositories, and so on and so forth. I'm part of day-to-day in the financial information side of the business, which is the different layers of data, services and solutions products, including, for instance, ESG data services and solutions products, indices, tax and regulatory services, of course, reference corporate actions and market data, and display and data feeds. And then the fourth capability within SIX is banking services. And that's not to be mistaken to be a banking provider. We provide cash and connectivity services, you know, for instance, for open banking. And we also provide billing and payment services. So broad array of different type of mobility and connectivity services for the banking sector. That's the broader group.
So how did you get your start doing what you do?
I focused in my undergrad studies on law and human rights implications in particular. So that got my interest first of all, in the S implications of ESG. And then I started off as an analyst at Deutsche Bank, moved from there to the UK, worked at F&C Asset Management, so banking and investment management trajectories on fundamental analyses, corporate analyses to start with. And then from there, very early specialization, interestingly, maybe because no one else wanted to do the job then, in the context of SRI investing at F&C. And I worked as a longer arm of the stewardship team, the ESG fund management team, I should say, or SRI fund management team, and then closely with stewardship team and others in looking at the core fundamentals of how to assess socially responsible investment trajectories for companies.
Do you think ESG is going to get reformed into some other group of words?
It's an interesting one. I mean, we have seen a couple of acronyms now, and to our point, right? It was historically classified as ethical and SRI investment. And then it was no longer broad enough because we also had other aspects that were going beyond socially responsible. We wanted to mainstream the topic, and ESG was a broader fundamental way of describing sustainable investing, and then sustainable finance was added on, which is more the capital markets considerations. But now I think there's a reflection point. And I think Alex Edmond summarized it very nicely recently in one of his pieces of research on LinkedIn that we need to define a new term. And we look for more sustainability, rationality of what is really at the core of what we're aiming to assess here. And even where we're looking just for short-term considerations, and if we're just looking, there's always been with ESG also the link to long-term value creation, by the way, right? And purpose. But if we are just looking for trade-offs, and again, in our book that you just highlighted, we looked a lot at these trade-offs in investment analysis and which type of methodologies from screening, integration, active ownership could enable investors to generate positive performance, potentially alpha. But if that is the only consideration, I think that's where we are running at risk in the moment to actually implement an ESG strategy. We're totally at miss of the fundamentals when and where we are setting out and where had been setting out in order to develop socially responsible, ethical, and now sustainable investment strategies. And now, of course, with the regulatory parameters, Morningstar just reported that as well, right? In the Q4 23 report, we saw massive outflows, unfortunately, initially out of Article 8 and 9 SFDR funds. That's another phenomena. And the question is regulation is a key driver for clarity, transparency, disclosure, rules-based approaches, but in the same time, given the complexity and the sheer metrics, data requirements, etc., concern that many clients are not unable to deliver and or to map and to resource for, have we created initially now the additional thresholds and barriers to entry and or additional layers of complexity that makes this whole exercise a mission impossible? And again, I'm referring to an interesting study by Kitogo in 2021-2, I think two actually in January, they came up with an interesting research around the 12 most prevailing labels, fund labels in Europe. They already classified that study mission impossible, right? Because by just mapping the key requirements for screening and thresholds, it became visible that you would limit and restrict your portfolio so much that you could never come to a point of positive performance, not to even mention alpha and outperformance here in that context. So that already highlights and potentially was a preset for what's happening now. So overlaying that development with the maybe more politicized debate of ESG, where it also got totally sidetracked, and then broader geopolitical contexts and priorities that are taking over, and protectionism, right, for instance, the fossil fuel industry and other type of segments that had made great strides on moving towards a transition agenda and now are slightly moving backwards. I think all of that combined, Sally, quite frankly, gives us the same backlash we have seen, but it's a cycle. That's also the other thing. But the same backlash we have seen after the sovereign crisis back in 2008-09, or first of all financial and then sovereign crisis, when and where her dear friends in the socially responsible investment industry that also faced massive layoffs. They were the first pioneers in that sphere. We shouldn't forget that. And they included myself. We all literally moved around in the industry. I moved, for instance, from the investment management industry in that context towards the service providers and became a founding member of MSCI's ESG research, data and rating / index team. And the rest is history. But that's also what shows you it's a cyclical development. So in the moment, of course, it's heavily politicized as well. And there are multiple other layers of complexity around the geopolitical context, et cetera, that are highlighted. But I think it is a cyclical context. Once we have more clarity, once the dust has settled around the regulatory requirements, and hopefully we see more interoperability there as well between international standards and requirements, I think we will see again more uptake and more interest. And at the end of the day, the core issues, and that's why I mentioned purpose and potentially core issues, right? They're not going away. Mm-hmm. Climate change, rising temperature, increasing amount of heat / wildfire / floods / impact of nature / catastrophes is ever increasing. And I think that's at the end of the day what is of interest and is directly impacting the consumer world, of which we all form part of as well. So we can really never differentiate here now going forward between what is finance and institutional capital versus what is the consumer and civil society, because in the context of ESG, it's all intrinsically interlinked and the externalities are there and they're making an impact and that impact is not going away. So we will probably see maybe a new framing to your point and hopefully a mainstream finance framing of some of the ESG topics, which just need to be considered in climate risk scenario analysis, for instance, within banking corporations, some of them being enshrined in law, depending on which jurisdiction you're talking about. But generally, the core issues are not going away, and we need to find broader solutions also beyond finance, clearly. Decarbonization solutions, for instance, right? And the right technology for it in order to manage them.
It's true. It's not going away. I'm thinking now about young people. Some of them are very aware of what's happening, like, for instance, in the fast fashion industry. Yeah. They don't want to, they're looking at their consuming. They're saying, do I want to buy these clothes that are going to just be dumped into and cause pollution? So there's a lot, everybody's examining it. So, you know, this of course brings us to the question. So much of our culture is really based here in the US and probably in the Western world, and maybe the rest of the world wants to be like us, is based on consuming. And we're going to have to iterate into a different way of being in the world, I think. I don't know what that looks like. Okay. Do you know anyone who does?
No, I think people, again, that look at broader systemic issues, as they call them, right? And systemic issues management.
Yeah.
They are the ones that are trying at least to grasp a bit of it and that try to connect the dots. And I think the mistake we have made and we're always making is that we are beginning to create silos. You know, if I compare that in product, for instance, we think, oh, is that now a data solution? Or is that, I'm making it up in the context of right exchanges, is that an issuer solution? And then the question is, well, at the end of the day, there's clearly the interconnectivity. Data connects the streams between issuers, investors, capital markets, service providers, you name it. If we understand it as a value system and we create this type of assessment, which already exists for impact, for instance, between net positive and net negative impacts, and we start putting a value against that, you know, then this becomes more measurable. One thing I would like to criticize, though, is this idea, and that's probably, again, why the ESG debate has run its course. What matters gets measured and what measures matters ultimately. And that is also not showcasing the entire perspective or picture of what we are trying to do here, because not everything yet can be measured. We had the biggest strides, right? That's why climate risk is such a good example, because the GHG emissions protocol has helped us to quantify science-based targets initiatives, helped us to quantify in other areas, right? For nature risk, that's just at a starting point. And for social risks, that's not even measurable in its full extent, / we don't even have the means to look at the full picture end to end. If you look at tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 suppliers, we don't even know sometimes when and where to grasp that information. So it is more qualitative of nature. But as long as we're going by the stats and the quant approaches only, which is another inherent approach for finance, and that's maybe why a lot of things are not running towards the same goals or means or ends, that's where we are having the challenges in assessing the entire ESG spectrum, because we have to start with, there's a philosophical approach, it's called intersubjectivity. We have to start actually looking at understanding and accepting that there are objective means and measures, there are more subject means and measures, and there's also a sphere in between, which we know needs to be there in order for us to create rules-based approaches, but it's neither one or the other. It's a shade of green or gray, intersubjectivity. Mm-hmm. And that's not, again, a philosophical concept, but which I think could be nicely applied to explain the challenges we face and why we need a systemic change of looking at things generally. And unless we're not looking at systemic transformation, I think we will never fully grasp of what we could potentially achieve with ESG and or broader financial analysis approaches and tactics in that sphere.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, but when you think about how far we have come from our mechanistic view, like I'm a few years older than you, and I remember when it was all about inputs and outputs, and that was it. You know,
right.
it was very mechanistic. And so I've always been kind of tracking the systemic review, systemic evolution, and I've been a boundary spanner myself. So I could see how we're moving along, we're chugging along, we're integrating perspectives, and that's good. I mean, I'm really pleased at that, but it is slow.
You're absolutely right. And believe me, I'm not so much younger. I'm soon 50. So when I started off as an analyst at Deutsche Bank, it was exactly that. My first day I was told about shareholder value.
Sure.
Being in the towers at Deutsche Bank, impressed by the sheer wealth and prosperity, sure. And then talking about shareholder value, I started asking myself, okay, so we're creating shareholder value. What does that mean for the rest of us? And mm-hmm. Interestingly, later on, this stakeholder value concept emerged, and as part of the sphere in ESG, again, was one of the founding pillars, right? Purpose, stakeholder value, long-term value creation. All of these maybe non-measurable terms overall, just as an indicator for intersubjectivity, right? At the end of the day, that's what this is. And I thought, that's interesting. That's literally got me thinking on my first day at work of what's missing in the current concepts.
Totally. I've always been fascinated by how we're evolving. We know so much more now, and it's all growing. So maybe you could tell me a little bit about your new climate data offering at Six. I see you have a number of partners here. I recognize the names of CDP is one, MCSI. So are they partners, or what do you call them?
Absolutely. They're content partners. So we have MCI, we have CDP, and we have INRATE. And there are very practical reasons for this. CDP is the baseline of climate and also nature risk data that's commonly used also by other providers such as S&P. MSCI has got a content partnership with them too. And that's how we classify this as a content partnership. And then we have, of course, MSCI, because they also have models based on carbon delta climate risk analyses, forward-looking models for climate value at risk assessments and implied temperature rise assessments that are very much now coming and up and coming, because if you look at the spectrum of the use cases that clients will have for climate risk data, you can see that backward-looking climate risk assessments is where the journey started, and that's still very much in demand, right? We're talking about GHG emissions data, for instance, versus green-brown share analysis, versus, for instance, increasingly TCFD assessments. These are just the traditional use cases now for backward-looking and regulatory compliance with climate risk trajectories. And you have got the forward-looking trajectories, you know, for this climate type of alignment, which includes climate VAR, implied temperature risk assessments, and the types of scenario assessments. From a Six perspective, three main layers, ESG 1.0, as we call it, is data and data hub. So we are adding 33,000 companies across these different data sets for climate risk that we are now servicing via data hub for redistribution. First of all, aggregation, normalization, aggregation of information and redistribution purposes and different delivery capabilities. Then we're using, obviously, content related to maybe regulatory content related to some of the requirements under SFDR, which also has, of course, a climate risk component under the principal adverse impact. And here you can look into compliance with, for instance, PEIs. And we have clients, that insurance clients, quite interestingly, that look at their own asset managers. Mm-hmm. time to check them up if they are SFDR compliant and if they're keeping their trajectories, not just only for climate risk, but generally trajectories on principal adverse impacts, the way they put them into their prospectuses. And we monitor this for them as part of the Request Content Services proposition, which also sits side by side with data. And then the other use cases here for six, beyond, of course, indices, which are not mapped because they sit side by side beyond my specific offering, but that is, of course, another use case going forward as well for climate-aligned or Paris-aligned indices. But more specifically, we're building also analytical solutions for portfolio management now, in the first instance for climate risk and nature risk assessments. The main drivers are these different use cases for climate risk. That's obviously emissions, screening, or green-brown share, or then again on the other side, climate alignment, meaning climate vow or implied temperature rise, or you have got scenario analysis. These are the either backward or forward-looking scenarios of climate that are traditionally used by investors in the industry. And we are providing investors, but also increasingly banking clients and others through our solutions now, with ultimately data, regulatory content, also linked to climate risk content, as well as SAS, that's software as a solution services, so that they can map going forward at least their risks towards climate in the first instance, and then nature risk, and then regulatory risk specific parameters under up and foremost in the moment EU SFDR regulation. And then we are mapping other frameworks such as, you know, so TCFD as a normative framework for climate risk, or TNFD as a normative framework for nature risk, mapping this at a portfolio level into the tool as well. And that's happening over the course of this year.
Can you give me an example of a customer?
Our offering is aimed at a broad array of different investment manager clients. So you find them predominantly either in the front office, or you find them in the middle, but also, of course, with data implications increasingly in the back office. Wealth managers, asset managers, asset owners, banks or private banks. And they literally in the moment use very often a so-called delivery channel for data called VDFS. That's very, very historically linked to the Swiss banking sector. And we should say SIX is also owned by 120 plus banks that are headquartered or denominated based in and out of Switzerland. And with this plug, we are going into the broader banking systems to deliver them, of course, financial data and information, but beyond that as well, climate risk data and information. So the use cases here, as you can see, middle and front office up and foremost, because they're driving decisions. Which climate risk models have they got in place? Which data needs have they got? And in the moment, we are predominantly selling this to clients in Switzerland because of the VDFS plug. And we are expanding it more and more across Europe. And we are building more and more data delivery mechanisms and capabilities that go, you know, into flat files that go at one stage, hopefully that's at least the aim, towards API. So then we ultimately can also service a much larger universe of clients. Mm-hmm. But the idea is really a combination between having the right data partners. That's very much more the content aspect, so that we know they can deliver backward and forward looking models and scenarios themselves, or they come in future to us for Sixfolio where we can help model it for them. And that we ultimately then build and extend the delivery capabilities. So we are really broadening our universe of global clients. Then the question is, why wouldn't they go to MSCI directly or CDP directly, and et cetera? What we are seeing, and this is why we're extending the data hub capabilities, that clients increasingly try to outsource their ESG operations because it's a very costly undertaking to do all the procurement, the due diligence, and then the ongoing maintenance and build up and build out of these type of data monitoring, management and reporting tools. Portfolio analysis is just one use case. So hence, you know, they look for partners end to end that can help them with undertaking that effort, especially the smaller to medium sized businesses. And for these clients, we want to be ready so that they can take different data formats and then either directly plug it into their systems or again, coming to us with sufficient selection and a broader selection of data partners. So they're not stuck just with one of them, when and where they can pick and choose, and what we say, plug and play, to then run their specific analyses based on their preset data requirements.
That's very interesting. What I'm astonished at, what's kind of dizzying to me, is how you can integrate your understanding what's happening in the world and with these data sets and the needs of a customer while advancing a cause. Like, how do you balance it all?
that's the ongoing assessment. Believe me, we spend 2022 at six in my team, really with a very few people, but core people, on market and competitor analysis and some type of benchmarking to exactly what you just highlighted, Sally, to define what the market needed versus where policy and regulation was at, and then to determine the key drivers and find the Venn diagram, so to say, for when and where we had to pivot for our services. Literally looked cross-border across the market. And what you can see here is we then classified what is traditionally the data and derived data, so index product space, and who plays there, you know, MSCI, Morningstar Sustainalytics, LSEG Refinitiv, ISS, now part of Deutsche Börse Group, and so on, S&P, and so on and so forth. And there's still a lot of demand for this type of data and ratings, but there's increasingly regulation. And to be honest, if you go and need an ESG data ratings proposition, you probably would start going to one of these leading big five or six companies. So playing in this space is very limited. You rather would want to remain Switzerland and play with all of them. And then beyond the fundamental data, you need to look into specialist capabilities, because thematic data sets or asset class specific data sets or impact data sets, these are the ones, and now increasingly regulatory data sets, are the ones where you can differentiate your offering, which might not be covered yet in full, at least, by the mainstream fundamental rating sets. And a lot of, especially large organizations, have taken on many different specialist data sets. So that's another sort of thing we saw, and we have actually mapped against a universe that we are now building into Data Hub. And then the other thing, the trajectory, what we see as a core point for ESG 2.0, that's REC risk and policy management. There's an ever-increasing amount of complexity, 1,255 new pieces of regulation in the last decade, according to ESG book, 45 plus taxonomies. Now, we're always talking about the green taxonomy, it's just one of them. So in order to understand this sort of regulatory requirements, content requirements, we have mapped out also the demand curve alongside the policy trajectories. And then last but not least, there's a lot of ongoing demand and a lot of CAGR to be literally achieved when and where revenue streams or growth figures are concerned in the reporting and broader solution / software space for ESG. And that's driven by the fact that you have so much complexity. Hence, you know, you want to ensure you deliver tools, systems, solutions that can help clients with this end-to-end management of their needs. That's where it's going. And that's why, in short, you know, we then mapped out what are the key drivers here and ultimately what could we deliver towards this regulatory, macroeconomic, technological, and clearly, again, client segment drivers, and to really look for products that can service that demand curve for ESG and REC risk analytics up and foremost, and derived data products, because they remain very strong in that space too. That's, for instance, indices. There's ultimately still a lot of growth in that market, and there's a lot of need still for specialist data capabilities. So that also means increasing customization to meet the varying client needs. And that's an ongoing and an ever-increasing trend too. So that's ultimately what we mapped out. And we did a lot of market analysis. You can see it here in the background on the other slides. So we literally looked at the entire spectrum. And that's when we then came and mapped out ESG 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 as the Venn diagram on where we want to be and want to play. So we want to be a one-stop shop or a multi-vendor single access point for data, content services, and solutions in ESG.
Is that your differentiation? Is anyone else doing that?
That's exactly our differentiation. You have variations of that, of course, across the industry. But when you look at very often, you know, many of the players, especially if they are marketplaces, for instance, they wouldn't necessarily be an analytics provider. And if they're an analytics provider or an analytical solutions provider, they would maybe rather focus on secondary market solutions versus primary market solutions. And what we try to really cover again, and again, there might be others out there, but it's hard to say because everyone has got a variation / area specialization. We really try to be this end-to-end data content services solutions provider that also works across primary and secondary market solutions. So we are not just focusing entirely on investor solutions only. We are looking also at the capital markets and primary market spectrum. You know, now with our new collaboration, we're going out with this very shortly. It was announced already at COP, six sustainability assessment solution empowered by Greenomy. That's our next big sort of effort. We literally launch a solution that will help to assess SME issuer data and information, provide green lending eligibility assessments. So that's the green loan space. And then in turn also will help banks to measure their exposure to climate risks on their balance sheets and lending portfolios. And mm-hmm. I think for us, again, you know, that's working with leading partners on innovation, where we can capture mm-hmm. areas that have not been historically yet fully developed or have been overlooked even, and where we see an end-to-end flow between SME issuer data and green lending solutions. So we are trying really always to find out the golden nuggets, so to say, when and where we know there is a demand in the market and where we need to continue to develop in order to go beyond what commonly is already out there as an SME reporting solution, but without the other end of the equation for banking systems, or when and where we see that there's a lot of focus on regulatory risk management as another example, but we want to also go that level deeper and provide via Doc Hub all the look-through mechanisms to the underlying source documents that mm-hmm. in turn will enable, you know, what we said earlier, insurance providers or asset owners to check the compliance of SFDR regulation by their own prospectuses of their sort of asset management subsidiaries and or clients. And I think that's the interesting play now, to look at what we have as regards to data and content and how then to map that into different services.
Sounds like a daunting task. Can I ask what your educational background is and who sure. your team is? I mean, what have they studied in school? I mean, if you were a young person who yeah. wanted to go on to be, you know, Martina McPherson, like in their career, what should they study?
Great pleasure. And so ultimately, we come from very diversified backgrounds. We have a strong focus on financial markets. And obviously, here's ESG and financial data and services, we should say. But we have, I personally have studied as an undergrad. I then moved more into finance, MBA education, et cetera. And now I'm undertaking a part-time PhD in sustainable finance, accounting.
You're working on one now?
I'm working on one now, exactly. So that's been an endeavor that's been going on for a year and a half at Cardiff University with the wonderful Professor Dr. Jill Atkins. We've been also Amazing. Co-authors in the past on various books like the Biodiversity Handbook, that's accounting, governance and finance. And now again, you know, it shows you that there is a convergence between the different subject matter experts we have also on the team. We have people with a strong economic background or economics background. We have people with a finance and financial accounting background. We have people that have obviously worked across different regulatory, again, and legal requirements and services, and are also content subject matter experts in this space. We have a very diversified range of people. My team is split over, you know, multiple jurisdictions and has multiple cultural backgrounds, so to say. So I'm a German national originally, but I studied partially in the UK. My obviously undergrad studies were in Germany. Other team members come from instance from Latvia, have worked in Sweden and then moved over to Switzerland. Others are French nationals, some of them working in France, others working in London. We have Swiss nationals still working in Switzerland. We have a Russian national now working in Switzerland. We have a British national working also in the UK, but with an multinational setup and background and a strong focus on environmental issues and geography from Imperial College. So you can see it's a very well diversified picture. What I think strengthens our proposition is that we really have environmental, social, also in the context of regulatory social implications and governance and regulatory implications, people with these type of backgrounds and strong financial accounting and economics backgrounds as well. So whoever is entering the sphere, don't be in despair if you have a mainstream financial services background. I think personally, it's actually an advantage because you know how the financial system as a whole works. And then you can remap and integrate the additional ESG considerations into this sphere. What I've seen is sometimes a challenge, but of course we have many individuals here in ESG generally as well, and I've seen that and they have built successful careers. But if you come with an NGO background, you sometimes have challenges of understanding, even getting access to and building an entry-level profile into financial organizations. And that's, of course, so important because we all need some level of maybe analyst training at some point. Mm-hmm. And you very often get that through, you know, studies in the sphere, and then you reconnect and integrate and, as I mentioned, connect the dots back to extra financial considerations. But to make this a credible and a financial-led approach, which is also considered credible and as credible by the mainstream, that's still what it is. I think you need to almost have a mainstream financial services and or maybe legal or regulatory background, given also mm-hmm. now the increasing mm-hmm. focus on this area, in order to very quickly grasp the key priorities that we need to move on with and within organizations to move the needle and to build the relevant products. That's at least what I've seen. And I think many product experts in the industry will probably be on the same trajectory. We are 7 in total, but absolutely, you see the trajectories of total years of experience and combined expertise. We really work on that basis and we work cross-border. We have 2 product proposition leads, Jelena and Fatia in my team, that look on the one hand more on regulatory content and on the other hand more on the analytical components. And we have a data expert, Artem, here that also tries to connect the dots. We have an operational workflow and project manager, cross-border, all the key ESG product developments, that's Leonard. And then someone that connects the dots in the market for understanding, interpreting, again, market analysis and bringing that back into the product development offering, that's Alexander Pavlovskis. And last but not least, we have Alexandre Casson in Paris, who is a content expert who also helps us to map the analytical requirements. And of course, we are supported by an array of partners, which in turn deliver also the products and services with us and to us. And we then leverage the different connection points here internally to ensure that we map the different partner products into the wider sphere and into the ecosystem, so to say. But yes, we work on multiple projects and very much in detail on a lot of these streams. And I think we have come a far and a long way in just 20 months now working together.
So this team was only created 20 months ago?
Yeah.
Oh, good work. Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'm impressed. Thank you for making me smart about that.
Great pleasure.
I don't know. I honestly, it's mind-boggling. So glad that I got to talk with you.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you're doing the work you do. It's going to make a difference in the world, and I'm happy for that.
Thank you. Likewise. I think we need multipliers and channels, and not necessarily in this order. I mean, channels and multipliers, maybe. I'm not sure. But I think absolutely, Sally, thank you. And to all your work as well, because if we wouldn't get the multipliers and channels, we couldn't get the message and all the work that's happening out there to also inspire and incentivize others and to actually counteract on the current backlash we're seeing and the anti-ESG sentiment, which is a reality, and we shouldn't close our eyes in front of it. And I think we need to now showcase how much has already been done and achieved and how much more we need to do.
I agree with you 100%. I think the challenge is people haven't been watching it very closely, and certainly here in the US, not at all. So not among the public, you know, in general, but we'll see. I'm hopeful that things will continue to evolve in a good way.